Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga in Washington. Here are some of the top stories we're covering on this Monday, March 10th, 2025. South Sudan's information minister says a U.S. State Department travel advisory is not necessary as all is well in his country.
This is uncalled for. Of course, they were frightened that there will be a reaction, and people who have been orchestrating all the stories that there will be South Sudan is going back to war, people will fight, and all these things. But then nothing happened. So it was uncalled for.
Authorities in Upper Nile State say some South Sudanese People's Defense Force soldiers are shattering with members of the White Army.
And so 14 of us remained. We were dispersed the second time till 6 of us remained. We spent 2 days without food in the bush. While we were coming, the chief found us and brought us to his house and he killed a goat for us, and we are staying with him.
We'll have these stories and more coming up right here on South Sudan in Focus. Some internally displaced persons sheltering in camps in Gardaref State say they need food and medical care. A Chadian refugee who fled from Darfur to Gardaref State says life inside the camp is tough for her family. John Tanza reports from Omdurman.
Kaltum Zakaria Ali, who fled from Chad to Sudan to seek refuge in a displacement camp in Gardaref, is struggling to feed her children. Her one-year-old daughter has not eaten since morning. Besides being displaced by the Sudan conflict, Kaltum has another problem. A doctor at the Sudanese American Physicians Association mobile clinic is treating her for mental problem. She says life in the camp is very difficult for her and her three children.
My condition is difficult. Sometimes I must beg, and those who have money give me 100 Sudanese pounds. Others give me 200 Sudanese pounds, and I am able to provide breakfast for my four children.
Sudanese and foreigners who have fled the fighting between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces say they face challenges in camps for internal displaced persons in Gardaref State. Fitin Awad Ibrahim is a Sudanese mother of four who fled from Khartoum to Gardaref. She says getting food for her children is a daily challenge.
It is 4 months since we arrived here, and since December last year, we received food rations only once. Just imagine a mother with 6 to 7 children who received one food ration, and you have not worked for 3 months. We have malnourished children, and you saw them when you were entering the camp. We need health care for the kids and the elderly who have chronic diseases.
When conflict erupted in the Sudanese capital Khartoum 2 years ago, families living in the nearby twin cities of Omdurman and Bahri fled to other states across the country seeking safety. Ibrahim says mothers at her camp face multiple challenges, including a lack of food and medical care.
We mothers don't have a lot of things because we don't have jobs so that we can provide for the needs of the children. These are major challenges facing us here.
Some women in the IDP camp fled without their spouses, and others were widowed by the conflict. Ibrahim says she fled from Khartoum to Gardaref with her children, and she has not been in contact with her husband since the war broke out.
My husband is not with me, and I have a sick child who has a problem. He was diagnosed with rheumatism, and his condition worsens, and the disease has reached his heart. He needs to do tests. Even I am sick, and I don't have money for doing a medical checkup because the nonprofits are not helping us.
The Sudanese conflict, which erupted in April 2023, has displaced thousands of families from the capital Khartoum and the twin cities of Bahri and Omdurman. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza, Omdurman, Sudan.
A team from VOA Africa is traversing across several cities in Sudan, including hotspots in Bahri and Omdurman. John Tanza and Omar Kaseko are traversing communities, talking to families affected by the conflict. We'll have more reports from John Tanza in Omdurman in the coming days. Authorities in Upper Nile State say some South Sudan People's Defense Force soldiers are staying with members of the White Army and village chiefs in Ulang and surrounding villages. The soldiers survived fighting last week between the SSPDF and the White Army militia. Mama Abraham Kuwait reports for VOA from Juba.
Clashes between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the White Army militia last week in Nasser scattered SSPDF soldiers around the area in Upper Nile State. Santino Bolmapal is an SSPDF soldier who fled the fighting at the Witch Yaradiu barracks in Nasser.
We were 18 when we escaped. We were dispersed again, and so 14 of us remained. We were dispersed the second time till 6 of us remained. We spent 2 days without food in the bush. Then we found a stream. We luckily got net with 11 fish in it. We roasted it and ate in the bush. While we were coming, the chief found us and brought us to his house, and a killer got for us, and we are staying with him.
Paul says there were 200 soldiers at the barracks when the fighting started on Monday, and 28 were killed. He says 25 were wounded. He does not know about the casualties from the fighting on Tuesday, which forced them out of the barrack. He says there are people looking for them in the bush, and the chief has told them to wait to be evacuated by air by the government. Another survivor, Santino Kwan, says the White Army made it clear they would fight when the unified forces were not deployed. He blames the transitional government for the fighting.
The forces at which he had due were few. They could not manage to fight for 3 days or 4 days. It's the government who did not handle this issue properly so that this could not happen. It is not there in the world for the civilian to fight with the army. There is a need for civic education so that civilian will not fight their government and the government not to fight civilian.
Ulang County Commissioner confirms that there are more than 50 survivors from the fighting in Nasser hiding in his county. He says they are being protected by some peaceful men with the White Army. The White Army is allied with the opposition SPLM-IO, led by the first Vice President Riek Machar.
There are some people, they are coming to my county and they hiding themselves where they get the server. When some people get them, they put them in their home, and I'm trying to collect them now to put them in one place because they are fearing.
Onson Chual James, the spokesperson of the White Army militia in Nasser and Ulang, promises to protect the survivors.
There are people who escaped from there. Some they are in my house now. And then 36 of them, they are in somewhere, my boomer. Then you go somewhere around here, my chief, local chief, 6 of them, they are there. We are no longer to kill any harm who escaped us from there. If someone come and kill that person, he would kill you first, later on he will kill that person.
However, Chual says they will only allow the national government to deploy the unified forces to the area. The National Minister for Information has said they have not deployed forces because they do not have guns due to arms embargo on South Sudan. Both Lee is a deputy commissioner of the South Sudan Revenue Authority in Upper Nile State and witnessed a deadly attack on a United Nations helicopter last week in Nasser. He says Nasser and Ulang will not be peaceful if the government resorts to violence.
What I witnessed there, those people, they're traumatized. So it needs effort from the peace partners to make them change. Because if we said we will just use the violence or we will try to fight with them in any means, this will escalate violence in that territory.
After the fighting began in Nasser last week, the national government arrested several leaders of the SPLM-SPLAIO opposition group. In addition, troops have surrounded Vice President's house. On Saturday, the National Security Service told journalists it had evidence linking the politicians and the SSPDF Deputy Chief of Staff to the Nasser clashes. The National Security Service asked citizens to remain calm as it investigates the matter. On Friday, President Salva Kiir Mayardit confirmed that an SSPDF commander, 22 soldiers, and a crew member of a United Nations helicopter were killed in Nasser when the White Army attacked an evacuation mission. Kiir pledged to uphold his promise to not allow the country to return to war. For VOA News, I am Ahmed Abraham Kuwait, reporting from Juba.
South Sudan's fragile peace is once again under threat as renewed fighting erupts in parts of Upper Nile, Western Equatorial and Western Bahr-Ghazal states. As tensions rise, faith-based institutions, diplomats and regional bodies are urging political leaders to uphold the revitalized peace agreement and work toward dialogue rather than violence. Sheila Pony in Juba reports on the growing concerns.
As violence escalates, church leaders, including Reverend Arama Justin, chair of the South Sudan Council of Churches and primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says the biggest threat to peace in South Sudan is not just the presence of armed groups, but the deep-rooted lack of trust among communities, politicians, and security forces.
The biggest threat to peace in South Sudan is lack of trust among South Sudanese. People of South Sudan, they don't trust themselves. Political leaders don't trust themselves. And the civilians don't trust the organized forces. So the organized forces also don't trust the civilians. And then the availability of arms in the hands of civilians, armed groups, and then different army. That is also another threat to peace in South Sudan.
Faith-based institutions have long played a role in South Sudan's peace efforts, but they say lessons from past conflicts have shown that peace is a slow process. Regional bodies such as the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, the African Union, and the United Nations have expressed deep concern over the ongoing violence. Speaking after a high-level meeting, IGAD Special Envoy to South Sudan, Ismail Wise, emphasized the need for political leaders to take urgent action.
And we would like that the leaders of this country to sit together and take this country out of the crisis. As an institution or the quartet, we would like also to ask the leadership of this country and to contain this situation and assure the people of the Republic of South Sudan that they have the right for peace, that they have right, like any other nation in the region, also to live in dignity and without fear of any damage to their health.
The government insists the security situation is under control. Minister of Presidential Affairs Chol Maiwud Ajong reaffirmed President Salva Kiir's commitment to lasting peace.
President is asking, the president has been a report. He has been saying this, that he is not willing and he will not be able. He decided that he should not take the people of South Sudan back to war again. He has been on record saying that. That has been his consistent message. Mission for this, and we go back to the pause of the implementation of the 2018 agreement.
Ter Manyang, Executive Director of the Center for Peace and Advocacy, CPA, emphasized the role of the church in peace building, stating that religious institutions play a crucial role in promoting reconciliation and fostering dialogue among communities and political leaders.
The church role in an advancing peace is primarily to promote values like forgiveness and reconciliation through teaching, leadership, and community engagement, acting as a platform for dialogue, mediation, and providing support to the conflict victim.
For many South Sudanese, the current insecurity has left them disillusioned. Deng Kun, a resident of Akobo County of Jonglei State in South Sudan, who has lived through decades of war, shared his frustrations over the unrelenting violence.
Everyone is desperate in this country. He has been lost the hope in the country. Have you seen somewhere like this? People who have run away from in the refugee camp, they are facing a lot of challenges because of this insecurity. Because if there's any good security in the country, no one should be outside. All of us should be here. Then everybody run out for any business. Then they will care for his kid, whatever they do.
As South Sudan struggles with recurring violence, religious leaders and civil society groups continue to call for dialogue and reconciliation, urging all parties to prioritize peace for the future of the country. For VOA News, I am Sheila Aponi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. U.S. State Department issues a travel advisory for Southern Sudan after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus here on the Voice of America. South Sudan's information minister says all is well in his country and that a U.S. State Department travel advisory issued on March 8th is not necessary. The advisory ordered the departure of non-emergency U.S. government employees from South Sudan last week due to security threats. It said armed conflict is going on and includes fighting among various political and ethnic groups. In addition, the advisory said cattle raids occur throughout the country and often lead to violence. Information Minister Michael McQuaid tells VOA's James Barry that President Salva Kiir has assured the country that South Sudan is not going back to war again.
This is uncalled for. Of course, they were frightened that there will be a reaction, and people who have been orchestrating all the stories that there will be South Sudan is going back to war, people will fight, and all these things. But that was their expectation, and nothing happened. So it was uncalled for. U.S. citizens can come to South Sudan. If they can advise U.S. citizens not to come, then what are they waiting for here? Their advice was not based on anything. There is nothing at all that can make them to issue such an advisory.
But last week, there were a lot of arrests and shooting. Doesn't that suggest some instability?
There was no shooting in Juba. There are arrests that have been conducted because those who are arrested here have been found to be the orchestrators of that incident which took place in Africa. There is no shooting in Juba.
Minister, there are those who are concerned that this incident can add to disturbing or delaying the peace process.
If the incident took place in Nafir and it has nothing to do with Juba, that is one. Number two, it will not affect the peace agreement because it has nothing to do with the peace agreement.
But does it also impact the preparations for elections in South Sudan?
As of now, election is at the end of 2026, not tomorrow. End of 2026 is the election. That is almost 2 years from now. How can you say, as of now, that thing will affect the elections later?
The United Nations representative in South Sudan, just I think 2 weeks ago, expressed concern or called on your government to begin preparations for the elections.
That is what they think. People are already in the process, but we cannot say now we are now going for elections because this election will be at the end of December 2026, not in December 2025. So there is still enough time for people to prepare and go for elections. All that they could have been saying, and instead they should have said expedite the process, the constitutional making process, so that the permanent constitution comes out in time, expedite the security arrangements so that all the forces are trained and unified. This is what they should be talking about.
So, Minister, is it the view of your government that last week's events do not have any impact on the peace process?
Did you hear the statement of a president where he assured the people of South Sudan that there is no going back to war, that I will not take you back to war? If he is assuring the people, it means that all these will not affect the election, and we are going ahead with the implementation of the agreement.
So before I let you go, Minister, the people who were arrested as a result of last week's event, have they been...
Those who are arrested will be charged because there is sufficient evidence against them that will warrant their being charged and taken to the court. There is no way whereby people who just begin to conspire against the government and then they are arrested and released. No. So the agreement does not give them the authority to sabotage and begin to work against the very government in which they are members.
That's South Sudan's Information Minister, Michael McQuaid. He spoke with VOA's James Batte from the capital, Juba. U.S. President Donald Trump said his administration has initiated the most extensive border and immigration crackdown in history during his recent speech to Congress. According to U.S. Border Patrol statistics, around 7 million migrants were arrested for illegal crossing at the U.S.-Mexico border during former President Joe Biden's administration, including repeat offenders. VOA's Paul Ndiho spoke with Chinwe Ismai, President and CEO of SEPTA 3 Global Advisors, a global risk management firm, about President Trump's immigration policy shift.
There's been a significant shift in the administration's policy as it relates to immigration, and most of that is around enforcement. So we've had a number of immigration laws in the books, but there's been a lot of frustration, especially over the last few decades, but it's really mounted in the last 4 years because there seemed to be a very deliberate posture and position by the prior administration, either not to enforce some of the laws on the books or to put in place certain programs that made it easier for immigrants to either obtain or apply for asylum and then violate those applications or to come into the U.S. So there seemed to be a very different posture with the prior administration, and President Trump is now enforcing those laws that have been on the books for a really long time.
President Trump ran on this issue, and the Americans agreed with him, but he has continued to get a lot of criticism in regard to how they have carried out some of these deportations. You and I come from Africa. There are a lot of Africans who have been deported, whose families have been, you know, affected by these deportations. Your thoughts on that?
You were very right in noting that the president did run on this. He identified a high degree of frustration in a lot of American cities. If you look across New York City, which has traditionally been a melting pot, there have been a lot of concerns around the increase in violent crime in the streets, but also around taxpayer dollars funding immigration, immigrants, residents in hotels, helping them start businesses. And you just think about the tension that creates between, you know, American-born citizens and people who are migrants, right? So you have certain American citizens who struggled for a long time to save up to start their businesses, to run their businesses, to maintain them. And then they see immigrants come who have their homes paid for, their residence, maybe not homes. In certain places, it is homes. They were being put in homes, but in New York City hotels. So that raised a lot of concern. So I think as the administration is implementing the strategy, they do need to be careful as to the impact. They do need to be open to tweaking the strategy to make sure it's not reaching unintended consequences. So while carrying out the promises made on the campaign trail, how do you make sure that you're not impacting people that otherwise you may not want to impact? The administration, I think, is executing it to the best of their abilities. And there have been instances, whether on the business side or on the immigration side, where even supporters of President Trump may have been impacted by some of this, right? So I think it's a time of realignment, it's a time of readjustment. And hopefully, once we have more of a steady state, with the transition, I think we will be able to see laws that are more predictable, where people understand what the consequences are for certain actions, and maybe there's a little bit less fear about potential repercussions, but there's more understanding of what the administration's policy is and how people can expect to comply.
That was Chinwe Ismai, President and CEO of SEPTA 3 Global Advisors. She spoke to VOA's Paul Ndiho. Kenya's government has signed a cooperation pact with the main opposition party that will see both political sides involved in critical government policy. The AP says the move has been criticized as an attempt to silence political opposition. President William Ruto and the main opposition leader Raila Odinga held a signing ceremony on Friday. It's the fourth time Odinga, a five-time election loser, has signed a pact with the sitting president. The two leaders said the agreement was not aimed at distributing government positions among the two parties, but instead it provided a framework for consultations on issues that affect Kenyans. But some critics say the deal effectively means there would be no opposition party in parliament. Bye, bye. Bye, bye. And that's it for this Monday, March 10th, 2025, South Sudan in Focus edition. We now leave you with the Kiname by Fale Ipupa.
Elle aime que je lui mette dans l'insulte. Pour couper, décaler, Afghanistan, je frappe. Respecte-moi, c'est pas une affaire de rap. Je serai pas Kika si je roule en Lada. Si t'as pas Gunta Waluna.
And that was Kiname by Fale Ipupa. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, on this live broadcast from Washington. For more information on our programs, log on to voafrica.com. VO Africa is now available on WhatsApp. To share your input on our broadcasts or receive our daily news updates, text us on +1 202 322 7501. You can also follow our WhatsApp channel by searching for our username VOA Africa. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and our engineer tonight, Bill Andrade, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Pas la meilleure est partie, mais la plus efficace. Paris, je t'aime, Zlatan est parti quand même. J'ai pas eu ma dédicace. Pas dans la tête, pas la meilleure est partie, mais la plus efficace. Paris, je t'aime, Zlatan est parti quand même.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The recent visit by three top U.S. officials to a town on the U.S.-Mexico border highlighted the all-of-government effort to stop the flow of illegal immigrants and dangerous drugs into the country. The border crisis has become a matter of national intelligence, and it's also become something that requires the Department of Defense to engage with, said Vice President J.D. Vance. Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, noted that under the previous administration, 21 million people have come across the border, many with no vetting.
From Central Asia, there were over 4,000 people who came across our borders using an ISIS-affiliated network. Our National Counterterrorism Center went through and identified those individuals. There were hundreds of them who were either known terrorists or associated with known terrorists. Our Counterterrorism Center is working on making sure that we have that single source for vetting so that we can figure out who is actually in our country and identify those who pose a threat and get them removed.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth noted that his department is bringing assets to bear that contribute to the significant progress being made on the border.
Not just troops, not just surveillance, not just equipment, but actual planning and capabilities that enhance what Border Patrol is already doing. We've seen it in the numbers. 98% drop in crossings on the southern border. We're not yet at 100% operational control, but we are on our way because that is the mandate that the president has given us.
Vice President Vance underscored that one way to help secure the border is to make it easier for people who are here illegally to go back home of their own accord.
We don't want to have to go around and arrest every person, but we will enforce the American people's immigration laws. If you're here illegally, the message from our administration is you should go back home, and if you want to come to the United States, apply through the proper channels.
Vice President Vance also urged the Mexican government to take seriously the job of fighting the drug cartels and traffickers and stopping the flow of drugs into the U.S. We want the Mexican government to help itself, but also in the process to help the American people, he said. We're hopeful they will.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.